Welcome to the English with Kirsty podcast from www.englishwithkirsty.com. Here I'll be sharing with you tips, information and other learning resources so that you can improve your business English. Welcome back to the English with Kirsty podcast. Today I have another special guest and I can say her name. It's Lynn. Hi, welcome Lynn.
Hi, Kirsty.
Usually people introduce themselves. Lovely to have you here. Let's find out a bit about you because I don't actually know you very well. We met through Carol, who some listeners may remember because Carol has been on the podcast before. But maybe you can just start by telling us something about who you are, where you are, what you do.
Well, based in Cape Town, so I know most people are terribly jealous the minute I mention that. Absolutely wonderful, of course, great weather. I have two daughters and a stepdaughter who are all grown, fled the nest. But what I do for a living is really take a brain-based lens to the typical applications in the workplace, to people who are needing to enhance interpersonal skills, those who are needing to and want to ambitiously move forward. So it's through coaching, training, and now speaking.
Do you work with companies and individuals or mainly like corporate training programs?
Yes, mainly corporate training programs. Symbiota Leadership Institute is the name of the company I founded. And it's really taking programs around leadership, sales, service, resilience, and trust to the workplace, where we probably all can agree it's desperately needed.
Okay, so that word trust, I know that's also linked to your TED Talk, because when did you do your TED Talk? Was that this year?
Can you believe it was actually only last month? It was in October. It feels a long time ago. But yes, I went to Namibia and stepped up on that stage, and my goodness me, it took a lot of courage. But
I can imagine.
It evolved beautifully, and I'm really happy with that. But yes, it was all about trust.
So how was the process leading up to that? I'm going to ask you a bit about the content of the talk in a second, but how did you feel when you were preparing to, and you knew you'd be standing on that stage giving that TED Talk? How was it for you in this time leading up to that?
I have to say that I was really held and nurtured unexpectedly by the TEDx team from this Namibian, it was TEDx Bonita Women. It was the name of the group. And Carol Constant, who you and I both know, and Beatrice were absolutely incredible. Beatrice is the organizer of the event and based there. They held coaching sessions. This is something that I never was aware of before I applied. Would in fact meet with me if I wanted to 5 times prior to the event. So looked at the script together, came up with different thoughts around it. We had practice runs at the event. It was absolutely wonderful. We had 8 women all in the same boat. And while it was really quite nerve-wracking, simply because of what was going on in our heads, not because of the environment there, it really was a great experience. So stepping up onto that stage, that long walk, in fact, from the back of the room to the stage, I used every emotional regulation technique I could muster. But I got up, and once there, I trusted, strangely enough, trusted that audience to be there for a particular reason, and that was that they were wanting to learn more about themselves. That it was personal development. They were open to all of the topics. I was with amazing women who just are so revered, it was a great experience. Thank you.
I think that's a really good point about public speaking in general. You know, people can feel so, I guess it's different if you know that you're going to deliver a message that people will hate and it's bad news and all that kind of thing. But generally, public speaking isn't like that. So people are there in a more positive way, that they want to support you. They don't want to see you fail. So I think sometimes we can forget that when we're too busy feeling nervous, especially if we're doing something in another language. I know that wasn't the case here, but you know, when we do, some of us that speak other languages, and a lot of my clients are learning English, and if they have to do something in English, so we can get so caught up in the anxiety and fear, even yes. for those of us who don't mind public speaking generally, maybe as soon as you start to do it in another language. But generally the people there are there because they want to be, they want to learn something, and they do want you to succeed generally.
Absolutely right. And the minute I could see that and feel that, I was able to relax. And I know that part of what we will discuss today is that sort of anxiety that compromises our being able to find our words, find our thoughts. So I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, and I'm sure you know a lot more about that in terms of the process, in terms of what's really happening than I do. So I look forward to finding out about that too. Because we were talking, when we had our conversation before the podcast, we were talking about this idea of trust, and how we need to trust ourselves as well. And sometimes before we can even learn to trust other people, a good place to start is trusting yourself when you have to do something that takes you a bit out of your comfort zone. So when we do that kind of thing, when we're in that kind of situation, what's happening in our brains, what's happening in our heads?
Yes, so I can relate a little bit because I did French at school. That was my sort of third language.
I've forgotten it all now.
Yeah, I was so proud of myself until I got to Paris and just had to ask for 10 stamps. That's it. And it was not well received. So I absolutely relate to a lot of your students. But what happens really is that in our minds, we have a certain view of the world out there. And when we're feeling slightly insecure about what it is we're going to voice, in that moment, we move into a fight and flight situation. So that fear center is really activated in our brains. And when we're in that state, all we really are concerned about is, you know, are people going to laugh at us? Are they going to belittle us? Are they going to insult us? And that is very, very normal. So that's our first step, just to understand it's really, really normal. Mm. When we're in that state, we're not going to be able to take risks, the kinds of risks that we need to step out confidently. We will generalize. It's like, well, you see, there I go again. You know, there I go.
What
am I wasting my money for? Yeah, always happens. And everyone's always like that. So we become hypersensitive. We also start seeing other people as the foe. So it's that friend versus foe. That occurs, and that makes us withdraw. So we're not going to do that. We are needing to be in an engaged state. So we almost have to reverse the flow of oxygen and glucose to our prefrontal thinking brain, right? And that is where we would be able to kind of say, right, it's normal to feel this way. It is, I'm just cancelling this scan on my laptop, that this is where we would be able to take risks to put ourselves into that vulnerable state at the hands of others. And it's there that we develop our self-trust. And when we do that, we're able to have the confidence to deal with the fallout, or have the belief that we can deal with the fallout of someone possibly making a little joke about us. And that's where I believe we're wanting to be when we're learning a second or third language, because there's just so much that's happening at the same time. So while you're in this irrational state, we can't also be in the engaged state. It really is a deliberate strategy that we need to put in place. Because on top of it all, we're fighting with multitasking. Because from what I can gather, if we're learning a language, we're also having to conceptualize every time what it is we want to say. So that's another activity that the brain's having to deal with. Then we're needing to grammatically give it an overview, right? And then we have to actually perform it or articulate. And the brain struggles with that. It struggles to do more than one thing. It can only handle two things if one is a habit. So we're expecting a huge amount of ourselves. I know I'm doing a lot of talking here, but I'm moving in the direction of trusting ourselves. We're expecting a lot, possibly too much of ourselves when we go into a public situation.
I suppose, especially if some of the resources are being diverted away into this irrational state, into, you know, feeling afraid because you don't make good decisions when you're feeling afraid, unless it's like how you can run away from them. Bear this, I don't know, you shouldn't run from bear, but how to get out of the situation. If all you're thinking is how you can get out of the situation, you're not going to be able to apply your brain to thinking in the other language, because you will forget things, you know, because you haven't got the resources that you usually have available to you when you feel calm and comfortable and able to think clearly. So that sounds like the way you described it is something that we don't just have to be subjected to this, that we can try and control this, what's going on. So what are some ways to try and reverse this situation to get out of this very negative, very reactive, very insecure way of feeling to move it to something more positive and more where we were a bit more in control of our thoughts?
Yeah. So I thought of really bringing two models together here. And the one is trust and the impact that self-trust has on us and our own brains, and then how we're able to create an environment of trust around us, which I think would be hugely useful if you're moving into a group of people that you don't know that well and where you are risking. So just a touch on trust. And what I'd like to share is something that was such a wonderful surprise when I did the Masters of Science degree in the neuroscience of leadership, was understanding that underpinning trust, this nebulous, really elusive quality or value, is a hormone, oxytocin. It's the same hormone that is released during lovemaking, during lactation, when you hug someone, have resonant conversations. It's also known as the empathy molecule and the moral molecule, i.e. trustworthiness. So this amazing molecule is able to, when I trust you for a certain thing, okay, I need to say, I need to have something that is authentic that I am trusting you for. Even if it's less than I might have before, maybe because I don't know you well enough, Kirsty, but I trust you for a little something. For instance, today, I trust that you and I are both here because we love to see people have a slightly easier time than they have to. And and in that moment, oxytocin spikes in my bloodstream as in yours. Just feeling my trust and my act of trust gives us both that opportunity. So now we have oxytocin spiking in our bodies and brains. And what we do is we, in that moment, become more confident. So oxytocin releases or modulates the release of dopamine. Dopamine is that passion and focus hormone. So this enables us to think more clearly. Now we're back into that prefrontal cortex area that I mentioned earlier. We can think clearly, we can discern who to trust and who not to trust. We're able to take a few risks, we can think on our feet. And in this state, we're able to develop a bit more empathy for the group we're with, which leads to our being able to trust them for a little something. That same little something, less than you might have before. And out of that comes a response that normally brings with it kindness, because people rise to your trust in them. You don't even have to mention the word trust. and they will start experiencing it. And in this process, you have created around yourself an atmosphere, a climate, a group of people who, although they might not quite be aware of why, are finding themselves a lot more empathetic to your plight and might themselves be able to play a little with you. And so out of that comes a collaboration and a teamwork, and that beautiful oxytocin cycle, I think, has great value and application here. So
but really, it's kind of like the energy that people have, because I don't think you're saying that we should just, you know, randomly trust everyone. But if you start from the point of not thinking everyone's out to get you, everyone's, you know, some people just have so much negative energy around them. They're like, oh, you know, everyone hates me. The world's a terrible place. And that tends to breed this kind of behavior in their environment. So you're saying if you start off in a more positive and trusting way, if you find out that somebody definitely isn't deserving of it, that you don't need to keep giving it to them. But if you start from the general perspective of wanting to trust, wanting to build something positive and good, that will help you to focus on your message, on helping the people around you, if you're delivering a talk or something like that, so that you're not focusing on the negative emotions that you would otherwise have.
Absolutely, absolutely. And to this, I'd like to also draw our attention to the fact that there are, so far, five distinct drivers that enable us to move into, if positively stroke, move into that thinking space. And similarly, if negatively triggered, possibly through someone's tone as they answer us, or possibly their expression, it negatively impacts us, and there we go into that caveman limbic state, right? And so I thought I'd mention these because it's worth our being able to acknowledge what we're feeling and then to be able to find a way to regulate that. So when it really is a nice acronym, SAFER, we're wanting to create emotional safety for ourselves. So it's about security, feeling certain. Most of us are uncertain. Then it's about acceptance. We're so afraid of rejection, right? Mm-hmm. So acceptance. And then F for fairness, E for empowerment, taking charge of the situation or feeling like we're disempowered. And then the R is for recognition. So I wanted to encourage us as we work our way into that sense of, let me trust myself for a little something, a little less than I might have before, that we are thinking about ourselves taking charge of our brains and our situations and understanding that the threat to our brain is this sense that we're in an uncertain space, our sense that people might laugh at us and our lack of acceptance. So why not say, right, what can I be certain of? I'm certain that I've practiced a couple of lines, right? Including, guys, I hope you don't mind, but I'm needing to practice my English. Is that okay? And possibly that's what you lead off with, but you've created some certainty. And what about your self-acceptance? You know, here I am. I have stepped out. I've learned a third or fourth language, and I'm being brave, and I'm trying to integrate. So here I am, you know, accepting and accepting you. And then goes to fairness and empowerment. I think empowerment's very strong here. Everyone here has courage, huge courage, to have taken on this incredible project. And you have empowered yourself. The recognition, interestingly, often comes through, well, yesterday, I didn't know as much as I have today. In that moment, our brain perceives that as a real status kick. And up we go. Dopamine is released as a reward, just thinking that way. So prior to being able to trust yourself, I say, create an emotionally safe space within yourself. Remember who you are, what it is you've done, and what you would bring to this group. So yes, that's what I felt important. I'd put together.
Thank you for that. And I think as I was listening to that, not as a teacher, because as a teacher, I tend to be quite, you know, balanced and encouraging and all these good things that teachers should be. But when it's me, like I was thinking as you were going through those words about fairness and about empowerment, I think sometimes the most unfair person in the room is ourselves. Like often people don't love. I mean, I've had very few occasions where people have been unkind about me using an additional language, but I think about the times that I'm not very fair to myself. Like, come on, why didn't you know that? Why did you forget that word? Why? Well, nobody else is thinking that because they probably didn't even notice. And I think one of the important things, we're talking about public speaking, but we're also talking about just using another language, maybe in a work context or going to an event and presenting yourself or something like that. So it doesn't have to be it doesn't have to be a TED talk, but there are situations that we go into. And I think it's really important to think that, you know, are you being unfair to yourself? Because sometimes the biggest challenge in the room isn't the audience. It can be us and how we talk to ourselves before we go into these situations. Because even if it's that internal dialogue that you have with yourself, those are words, and those words have power. If you start telling yourself a story like, oh, it's gonna be really bad, it's gonna be really scary, then that's how you're gonna feel. But if you try to focus on some of these more positive, you know, about acceptance, about safety, about recognition that, you know, this is the first time you've done something, well, that's good, isn't it? Because you have to start somewhere. And yeah, so that you may not be able to, you can't control other people's behavior. You don't know what other people are going to do. Chances are it will be positive, but okay, you don't know that. But you can take some charge of the situation in terms of how you go into that situation. So not just the preparation, but how you, like the story you tell yourself as you're waiting to have that conversation or give that presentation.
Yes, it really is, you know, because your brain is not you. You have control over that organ, and it will naturally default into, this is a life and death situation. That's all it knows. It's a rustle in the bushes when we lived in caves. So it doesn't know the difference unless you tell it differently. And that's really important, because you're so right. Our confidence is impacted greatly by our sense of the world, our sense of certainty or uncertainty. We need to create that for ourselves, and step up, step out, knowing that we're really, you know, doing something that is noteworthy, that you can recognize yourself for. You're so right. Yes, and in fact, the trust model, we probably are moving to a close, but the trust model itself, TRUST, is an acronym that reminds us before any occasion, any event, any encounter, to one, think about what your threat is. So you're drawing awareness to what it is that you're actually feeling. Now, just thinking about whether it is that you're feeling unaccepted potentially, or what is the threat, that thinking process already redirects oxygen and glucose to thinking brain. Isn't it amazing? So you ask yourself, what threat is it? Fine. So let's just say you are afraid of being ridiculed. So that's an acceptance thing. It's also a recognition issue. It's a trigger of, you know, that causes great uncertainty, potential rejection. So what we're now needing to do is to say, right, my certainty lies in my being able right now to regulate that thinking. How can I reframe it, for example? And Kirsty, you did it so nicely there. You were reframing much better. But, you know, what if this encounter goes really, really well? Mm-hmm. And if it doesn't, let this become my biggest dinner party story. Let it become that fun, you know, what happened to me, my most embarrassing. So out of that, you're much more fleet-footed, and you are in a place to decide to trust yourself. Reduce that expectation of proficiency for this encounter. You're working your way there, for example. Mm-hmm. Can you trust yourself? If you do go in, decide to trust them, and they let you down. Can you handle the fallout of that? Our brain doesn't necessarily think so, so we need to tell it, well, yes, I've been in situations before where I've managed despite having been insulted where I've been able to walk away gracefully with my own integrity intact. Thank you very much. Okay, great. So you can deal with the fallout of it. And now you put yourself in their shoes, and that's the S of trust. So you've had the threat, that's the T, the R for regulate or reframe. The U is do you trust yourself? And now the S is for what's their state of mind? I also might use it as put yourself in their shoes, S. Because how might they be feeling? They don't know you. They're concerned for you. Anxiety is also contagious. They're feeling anxious for you, knowing that you look like you're about to struggle. So, how are they feeling? And literally put yourself in their shoes. You've got to feel some empathy in order to kickstart your oxytocin go around. Then decide what you're going to trust them for. So, all of this becomes a great little practice that goes far faster than you might think. It does in the beginning. But before you go into something, it feels a bit scary. The last T is trust them for a little sincere something, the fallout of which you can kind of handle, you feel you can handle. And that's your trust model. And it prepares your mind, prepares you. And as you walk in, their brains perceive what you have decided, and that is to trust them. And this is great in organizations as well, where inclusion is a real issue, where one feels one's being unfairly treated. It has so many applications and it works really, really well. So I just wanted to encourage you with that.
And I think it's about being mindful as well, like deciding on the narrative that you're going to have so that you don't just feel like you have to. I mean, sometimes, oh, that's my clock. Sometimes you do have to respond to situations, but if you can decide how you want, I don't think you can ignore your feelings. Everyone's going to still feel nervous. Like these feelings don't entirely go away, but I think it's good if you can prepare yourself so you're not just having your decisions made for you by everyone else around you. We can be empowered to be part of this as well.
That's
Thank you. So where can people find out more about you and the work you do? Which social media platforms do you like? I think you have LinkedIn.
Yes, I think LinkedIn is the best place. And you'll find me under Lynn Swain, LynnSwain. And there you'll find out a little more about Symbiota Leadership Institute. And we're offering talks internationally, so I'm looking for opportunities to speak in the UK. I happen to have a daughter who lives there, so it's extra special to be able to make annual trips across for a few months. So that is really what I would like us to look at. If there is anything in this talk that you're wanting, you feel could be replicated in corporate environment in particular, or a group or an association, I'm very open to that. And thank you,
Okay.
Kirsten.
And I
It's
was,
been really wonderful being
yeah,
with
no,
you.
it's been good to think about, to understand a bit more about what's going on and to also think about things in a different way, in a more proactive way. I will also link the TED Talk so that people can watch that as well. I'll put that on our podcast
Thank
page
you.
and the LinkedIn link so that people can get in touch with you and find out more if they want to discuss any future projects or have
Absolutely.
any comments, then we'll stay in touch. So thank you for coming on the podcast. Thank you for your time today. And yeah, I wish you success with your future projects and talks and whatever else you have planned.
Thank you so much, Kirsty, and thank you to all your listeners. I will look out for you on LinkedIn.
Okay.
Great. Thank you, Kirsty.
I hope you enjoyed this episode of the English with Kirsty podcast. If you have any questions or comments, my email address is kirsty@englishwithkirsty.com, or you can go to www.englishwithkirsty.com/podcast, where you'll find information about the individual episodes.